attendance and get those answers within 45 days. Many of the family members who are awaiting trial are really eager to learn about many issues that go far beyond the roles of the five men who were accused, now down to four men because one of them has been ruled incompetent to stand trial. But I think if we, as a diverse community of people who lost family members, had had an opportunity to really take advantage of what the plea agreements offered, we might be a lot further along as a nation toward reaching some kind of understanding.
Terry Rockefeller, I want to thank you so much for being with us. You lost your sister on 9/11. And this last fact, it cost $500 million to run the Guantanamo prison, something like $13 million for each of the 30 prisoners left. Compare that to something like $78,000. It's $13 million per prisoner in Guantanamo, $78,000 for people, for prisoners at Supermax held at a federal prison. That does it for our show. Shana Kadidal of Center for Constitutional Rights, thanks so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's Election Agenda Survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover the 2024 election. We want to know, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Fill out our survey by August 14th, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card. Full rules on our website. At the end of August, we'll report back with the community's priorities. Find the survey online at bit.ly/KBOOSurvey24. That's bit.ly/KBOOSurvey24. Thanks for your help.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, nearly 9,000 Oregonians are under wildfire evacuation orders, even as some of the largest fires are near containment.
Clackamas County will not offer a drug deflection program as drug recriminalization approaches.
And in national news, a federal judge finds Google in violation of antitrust law.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 5th, 2024. I'm John.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Nearly 9,000 Oregon residents are under some kind of evacuation notice because of wildfire. About 1,200 are under a Level 3 Go Now evacuation order. Over 1 million acres have burned so far this wildfire season. That's four times the average acreage burned per year. But firefighters have made major progress on containment for many of the largest blazes so far. The Durkee Fire in eastern Oregon was so large it was creating its own weather. Now it's 86% contained, with full containment expected on Thursday. It's burned 294,000 acres since it was started by a lightning strike on July 17th. In the Gorge, the city of Antelope in Wasco County was put under a Level 3 Go Now evacuation order on Sunday because of a new fire that grew quickly past 400 acres. Parts of central, eastern, and southern Oregon are under air quality advisories because of smoky air. They recommend people stay inside because the fine particles in smoky air can cause headaches and even worsen existing medical conditions. Oregon wildfire officials worry the fire season will continue through August and September and potentially worsen. Huge fire weather is expected this week, and hot temperatures mean dry trees and grasses become fuel for a fire much quicker. Officials are also concerned about fatigue and burnout for firefighters who are dealing with 5 mega fires across Oregon. Firefighters can spend weeks on a fire and get just a few days off before being sent on a new assignment.
Wildfires continue to burn across Oregon this year, but a few tips could help people protect themselves against their damaging impacts. Fires have burned more than 1 million acres so far in what has become an annual occurrence for Oregon. Scott Leonard with Energy Trust of Oregon says smoke from wildfires has consequences for people's health. He says it's important to keep unhealthy air out by closing gaps around windows and doors and sealing around air conditioners.
People know what it's like to have a drafty house. So if you're feeling drafts, you can do things like add weather stripping to keep the smoke from drifting into your house, making sure just really that there's a seal on any kind of crack or gap in the shell of the home.
Leonard says people can also switch their HVAC systems to fan only to clean up air from the outside, but they should make sure to switch it back to auto once smoke is no longer an issue. He suggests people check and regularly change their air filters and also be aware of other sources of unhealthy indoor air, like candles and certain kinds of stoves. These can worsen bad air conditions. Leonard says people can look into air purifiers as well.
Consider putting in a portable air purifier or a high-efficiency filter. This is going to help keep the indoor air clean and run that purifier as often as possible at the highest fan speed.
Leonard notes Energy Trust of Oregon offers instant discounts on air purifiers and incentives for other upgrades that makes homes more energy efficient. He adds that moves to make homes more energy efficient can also make them more fire resistant, such as through-ridge installation, installing triple-pane windows, and sealing attic vents.
So if you seal your attic vents, what you're doing is you're preventing any type of wildfire embers that are floating around in the air from being sucked up into your attic and essentially igniting the attic from the inside.
That was Scott Leonard with Energy Trust of Oregon.
A state grant committee has rejected funds for Clackamas County's drug deflection program. The decision means the county won't get the nearly $1 million it sought from the state. According to Clackamas County District Attorney John Wentworth, the decision was, quote, completely unexpected. It's another kink in the rollout of HB 4002, which undid key pieces of Measure 110. That was Oregon's groundbreaking drug decriminalization legislation. Significantly, the bill reintroduced a Class E violation for the possession of small amounts of illegal drugs. Violators could decide between jail time or deflection. The bill left it up to counties to decide whether they would offer deflection and how. In its grant application, Clackamas County said it would refer Class E violators to the county's community court. According to DA Wentworth, the community court involves a judge, but is based on a quote-unquote service model, where, quote, nonprofit organizations and county agencies that are dedicated to assisting folks in areas of housing, food, job opportunities are all in one place there in the court, end quote. On Thursday, the Criminal Justice Commission, or CJC, voted down the proposal, saying it failed to meet state standards. The CJC administers the Oregon Behavioral Health Deflection Grant Program. Speaking about the decision, Paul Solomon, the chair of the CJC, said, quote, it's our understanding based on the reading of the state law that his, meaning Wentworth's, program resembles diversion and not deflection, end quote. A sticking point for the CJC was the prospect of the community court using pending legal charges to compel violators to get treatment. The decision means Clackamas County will prosecute Class E violators. 28 of Oregon's 36 counties have sought a total of $16.7 million in grant money from the CJC. While Clackamas County's proposal was rejected, Multnomah County received the $3.9 million it requested for its deflection program.
A new federal ruling says Google has violated antitrust law by keeping other competing search engines out of the hands of consumers. KBOO's Grant Button has more.
Google illegally abused its market power to keep a monopoly on search engines. That's what a federal judge ruled today. This was a major antitrust victory for the U.S. Justice Department, who have been trying to contain Silicon Valley tech giants. U.S. District Judge Amit T. Mehta ruled that Google suppressed its competition by paying billions of dollars to phone manufacturers and web browser operations to make Google their default search engine. He said, quote, Google is a monopolist and it has acted as one to maintain its monopoly, end quote. The ruling comes after a 9-week trial, and it says that Google violated Section 2 of the Sherman Act with its monopolies in search and text advertising. The Justice Department argued that Google violated federal antitrust laws by forging contracts that require Google to be installed as a default search engine on Android phones. Google argued that users were free to switch their default search engine without difficulty. This ruling only dealt with whether Google violated antitrust laws. A separate proceeding will determine the next steps to increase competition among search engines. The case has been watched closely for years in antitrust law circles. Watchers note this is the first of a string of cases federal prosecutors have launched against tech giants. Lawsuits have also been filed against Amazon, Apple, and Meta. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
Portland police say they were successful in stopping an illegal street racing event this weekend. Street racing or street takeovers have become more common since the COVID pandemic. They involve cars blocking off an intersection while other drivers perform stunts and race each other. A large street racing event, dubbed the West Coast Invitational, was scheduled for this weekend. Police made 47 traffic stops on Saturday night into Sunday morning and arrested 11 people. Police also towed 10 vehicles. Some of these vehicles were lost due to asset forfeiture, meaning the drivers lost the car permanently by participating in street racing. Police also broke up at least 6 attempted street takeovers early Sunday morning. In a news release from the police, they said that most takeovers were broken up within minutes. Sadly, on Friday night, 2 people died when the car crashed while fleeing police officers in Gresham, and another person was seriously injured.
Vice President Kamala Harris vets potential running mates. Former President Trump feuds with Georgia Republicans who say 2020 election wasn't stolen, and Ohio election officials highlight efforts to erase non-citizens from the voter rolls. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
That is the absolute litmus test that Vice President Harris has lit something that we needed. So it's a new day. It's a new school year. Everything's possible.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says he's delighted to see Vice President Kamala Harris inspire young voters. The former teacher is reportedly on the short list of those Harris is considering for running mate, along with Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro and Arizona Senator John Kelly. An announcement could come as soon as today. Former President Donald Trump is reopening a feud with Georgia's popular Republican Governor Brian Kemp and with Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. Trump blames them for not supporting the false claim that he won the state in 2020 and says they should stop prosecutors from charging him with election interference.
Your governor, Kemp, and Raffensperger are doing everything possible to make 2024 difficult for Republicans to win. That what are they doing? I don't know.
To win this time, Trump may need Kemp's extensive political network, which could help with Georgia moderates. But Trump's already drawing criticism from former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who is publicly endorsing Harris, and says his fellow Republicans should stand up to the former president.
This is now starting to not be Donald Trump's problem. This is starting to be the Republican Party's problem.
The Georgia GOP says Duncan should be prevented from ever running as a Republican again. Meanwhile, Trump says he'll debate Harris on Fox News or not at all. He says a previously scheduled debate against President Joe Biden on ABC can't take place since Biden bowed out, and Trump has sued the network for defamation. Ohio election officials say they've found and removed 500 non-citizens from voter registration. That's one for every 16,000 names on the rolls. Non-citizen voting is already illegal and extremely rare, but Secretary of State Frank LaRose has joined a national GOP campaign against it. He says he wants aggressive prosecutions.
It's a relatively small number, but it should be proof that if you mess around, you'll find out. And if anybody thinks they can register to vote in the Buckeye State as a non-citizen and get away with it, they got another thing coming.
More than 9 in 10 black women voters supported Biden in 2020. Shakia Cherry Donaldson with the group 1,000 Women Strong says turnout among black women fell in 2022, but Harris's candidacy could change that.
When bills are passed, when bills are struck down, black women have to be a part of every part of this process, and our well-being has to be considered.
Some 44,000 people, mostly black women, rallied for Harris in a massive video call last month. What may have been the largest ever Zoom meeting focused on pay equity and health care access, but the group also raised more than $1.5 million in 3 hours. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Sandra Tutel from Cascade Life Alliance about the importance of organ donation education. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is clear with a low of 67. Tomorrow's weather, sunny with a high of 80. Today in history, in 1926, Harry Houdini performed one of his greatest feats, being submerged in a metal coffin underwater without added oxygen for 91 minutes. In July of that year, magician Rahman Bey successfully performed the stunt for an hour and directly challenged Houdini to beat his time. Less than a month later, Houdini broke his record by 31 minutes. And a quote of the day is from Harry Houdini, who said, quote, "Keep up your enthusiasm. There is nothing more contagious than exuberant enthusiasm."
Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu is campaigning for Vice President Harris, part of an effort by Democrats to get Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander voters to support her candidacy. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native Hawaiians are part of a coalition that Democrats are urging to get behind Democratic Party presidential nominee Kamala Harris. Acting U.S. Labor Secretary Julie Hsu, in an unofficial capacity, is leading the effort. Chuck Kornbach of Station WUWM reports.
Julie Hsu was born in Wisconsin to parents who came from China and Taiwan. Democrats have asked Hsu to speak to groups of voters around the U.S. made up of people of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander descent who are backing Vice President Kamala Harris's bid for the White House. At a gathering of an AANHPI coalition for Harris in Milwaukee, Hsu spoke of conservative attacks that claim Harris is a diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, candidate.
That idea is a horribly cynical, mean, and frankly, it's an attempt to undermine people for what they have actually done.
Hsu is being identified at the organizing events as the Honorable Julie Hsu and is not talking about policies of the U.S. Labor Department to try to avoid laws banning federal employees from engaging in political campaigns. But Hsu told a reporter about the importance of collecting federal data that is correct for Native people, including Native Hawaiians.
When we collect data about communities, we have to include every community. When we collect data about Asian Americans, we also can't just collect it in the aggregate because the aggregate data tends to obscure what's really happening in specific communities. And for Native Hawaiians, that has long been an issue. So under this administration, we have disaggregated data in ways that it's never been done before.
Holding on to AANHPI support may be crucial to Harris winning against Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. Polls released a few months ago showed most of that coalition still favors Democrats, but Republicans have been making gains over the last 8 years. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
The Northern Arapaho tribe is using more than $500,000 in federal funds to create a tribal reentry program for previously incarcerated citizens. Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clemens reports the program's meant to help tribal members coming from correctional facilities readjust to life on the Wind River Reservation.
Nationally, Native American people experience disproportionately high rates of recidivism. The Northern Arapaho Reentry Agency is intended to fight that trend. The program collaborates with other groups on the reservation, like White Buffalo Recovery Center, to coordinate culturally appropriate services. That includes housing and substance abuse treatment. Terry Smith is the agency's administrator. for now its only employee, and a member of the Northern Arapaho tribe.
I do have lived experience. I've been to prison. I've been on probation. I'm in recovery. So I feel like I get them on a level that others can't.
Though it's still getting up and running, the program's goal is to eventually reduce recidivism by at least 50% among participants. States like Arizona and Utah have similar programs. In Utah, the Navajo Nation has lowered its rate to just 6%. For National Native News, I'm Chris Clements.
Native American culture and history are being shared at the California State Capitol Monday during the 5th annual California Indian Cultural Event. The day includes the California Native American Legislative Caucus introducing its inaugural class of Native American Day honorees. The honorees include advocates, tribal leaders, and educators. They're being honored on the assembly floor for making a positive impact and change for Native communities throughout the state. The day concludes with cultural performances and a reception with the honorees. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Newly introduced federal legislation aims to protect voters from the growing threat of AI-generated political ads. Manipulated audio of Vice President Kamala Harris's voice spread widely on social media is just the latest example of the so-called deepfake designed to sow confusion ahead of the November election. Richard Anthony with the advocacy group Public Citizen says disruptive AI content in recent European elections reveals the urgent need for action.
Those incidents were just testing grounds for a big, huge torrent coming our way over the next few months.
Anthony says bipartisan legislation would prohibit the use of AI content for certain political ads and require disclaimers on content substantially generated by AI. AI robocalls are already illegal after a misleading deepfake of President Joe Biden before the New Hampshire primary. Lawmakers say without clear regulations, deepfakes could be used to distort election results and widen partisan divides. Earlier this year, tech companies signed a pact to voluntarily prevent AI from disrupting democratic elections. But Anthony says it was largely symbolic and failed to commit companies to banning or removing deceptive content. He says it's important voters be aware of bad actors, and if they see a political ad, they always check its source.
Definitely do double takes on any video, any audio file you hear or see online.
In the absence of federal rules, 18 states, including Oregon, have already passed laws on AI deepfakes. Bills are pending in six others. The Federal Communications Commission has also proposed a rule to require clear disclaimers on AI-generated political ads and broadcasting. The public can submit comments through August 12th.
Community and technical colleges offer bachelor's degree programs across Washington State. As KBOO's Grant Button reports, this increases opportunities for people in multiple career fields, especially in rural areas where there isn't a four-year university.
Four-year universities aren't always able to serve every student, so Washington State has found a way to ensure students have other options through community and technical colleges. Unlike some other states, all 34 community and technical colleges in Washington are authorized to offer applied bachelor's degrees. Valerie Sunby with the Washington State Board for Community and Technical Colleges says many of the schools offer teacher certification programs.
For our rural communities that have a very hard time attracting teachers to their areas, it creates an opportunity for them to really grow their own.
Sunby says the bachelor's degree programs at these community and technical colleges have high retention and graduation rates and have led to employment opportunities at high rates as well. The state has 165 degree programs, including nursing. Sunby says these programs ensure students get hands-on work training.
They are very focused bachelor's degrees that although they have the breadth of a bachelor's degree and give them some of those general educations and things like that, they also have a very clear technical and employment outcome at the end of it.
Sunby says it's no accident that students are able to find a job when they graduate from the bachelor's program at community and technical colleges in the state. The schools themselves ensure there's a need in the region before deciding to offer degrees in a certain field.
Our colleges do a lot of work with their local economic development groups, with their local workforce boards, looking at all of that workforce data and understanding what is the current gap and then what is the projected future gap, and making sure that there are clear employment outcomes and opportunities for students.
For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Button.
Researchers have documented two shark species that are new to the Puget Sound. That's according to a study conducted by Oregon State University. During 10 days of fieldwork in 2022 and 2023, the researchers caught 10 sharks belonging to the broad-nosed seven-gill and the endangered soupfin shark species in the southern portion of the Salish Sea. Nine of the sharks were broad-nosed seven-gills, which were caught almost 200 miles away from their previously documented range. Only one soupfin shark was captured. Soupfin sharks got their name from being a key ingredient in shark fin soup and were relentlessly exploited in the 1930s and 40s, resulting in their endangered status. One explanation as to why soupfin sharks would be found in the southern Salish Sea stems from an extreme heat wave in 2015, causing an abundance of anchovies in the area, which are known prey for soupfin sharks. Both types of sharks generally live in temperate waters and are the top predators in any ecosystem they inhabit. OSU researcher Jessica Schulte is the lead author on a recently published seven-gill paper. She said, quote, "Understanding the seven-gill presence in this new habitat is crucial for understanding the food webs of the Salish Sea, and it highlights the need for continued monitoring and research, including their relationship with other species of conservation concern, such as salmon," end quote.
A pilot project in New York City will offer quick cash grants to people after major floods. The goal is to speed up relief for victims. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. After a flood, getting an insurance payout or a disaster relief check can take weeks or months. But many people need help right away to cover the cost of repairs, pay for short-term housing, or make up for lost wages. So Helen Wiley of SBP, a disaster recovery nonprofit, says there's a need for new financial tools that help provide fast relief after disasters strike.
The goal here is to have emergency cash grants that can help financially stabilize high-risk households in this immediate recovery period.
In New York City, her group is partnering on a pilot project testing one approach, a type of community-wide insurance that could be funded by philanthropic or public dollars. A third-party group, such as a nonprofit, holds the policy. When a flood of a certain severity occurs, it triggers an automatic payout of a set amount. The money is then distributed to community members who fill out an easy application, so the model avoids the conventional, lengthy claims process.
This mechanism really allows us to get money out very quickly to households.
And people can spend it on home repairs or whatever they need most. So it's an innovative way to help financially vulnerable households bounce back after a disaster. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 5th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button, Reed Johnson, and Patches. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Will Walkie, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm John G.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our lovely members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We'll be speaking with Sandra Tutel from Cascade Life Alliance about organ donation in Oregon.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Sandra Tutel from the Cascade Life Alliance, here to talk about organ donation and the work that this organization does. Welcome, Sandra.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here today.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to speak with us. So let's get into it. What is Cascade Life Alliance for people who don't know?
I am the manager of the community outreach program, which is new for Cascade Life Alliance, and two outreach coordinators that have been working with me to develop this program. We are going out to the communities. We've been to like Juneteenth, Oregon, the Delta Park powwow, the Blues Fest. We're just going to a lot of community events in order to do organ, tissue, and eye donation education. We're also, as a result of a state law that goes into effect academic year 2025, are preparing a new, very engaging, inspiring high school curriculum. So there was a 16-year-old girl, her name was Nisha, and she met with Representative Rayfield out of Corvallis, yes. And she just gave him a presentation and talked about the need for organ, eye, and tissue donation to be provided to high school students before they actually go to the driver's or to the DMV to get their driver's license when they're asked that question, you know, do you want to be an organ donor? And so he was so impressed with what she presented, and he worked with some others, and they created House Bill 3234, which states that in academic year 2025, that organ, eye, and tissue donation will be required at all Oregon high schools, usually in a health class, which would occur their first or second year of school. And so this would be before they go to the DMV. So out of that, we wanted to just really make sure that they had the proper information, that they had all the resources they need. And when I say they, I mean the teachers that are now tasked with providing this education.